Vince McConnell and Shannon with you as per usual, and a day of reflection today, John, on the close but no cigar for the Toronto Blue Jays, who swept the Baltimore Orioles but couldn't get any help from Washington, got not quite enough from Tampa Bay, and wind out a game out of the postseason. Your general thoughts on this?
Well, I think you have to look back at the Yankee series at Rogers Center and say they screwed it up at the Yankee series. And I know that it's only two losses of, around of 71. But at the same time, they had their chances in those, in the Tuesday game and the Thursday game to win. And we had talked about it, prior to that, if they were going to get to the playoffs, they might have to sweep the Yankees and sweep the Orioles, or at least win both series and win the series against the Yankees and then sweep the Orioles. And they fell a game short. I mean, that's the truth of it.
Well, I think you got to go back further than that, to be honest with you. I mean, they went 4-2 in their last six games, and obviously that wasn't enough. They needed to go 5-1, but that's a pretty steep hill to climb, especially when you've got the New York Yankees in. I think you got to go back further and look at some of the games earlier or late in September. Mm-hmm. And I mean, hell, you could go back to April, for goodness sake.
Well, you could go back to the fact that, and I know that they tried not to make it an excuse, but starting in Dunedin, going to Buffalo, and then finally getting to Toronto had to play some sort of a factor.
Oh, huge.
Yeah. But this team, for its time in Toronto, was one of the best teams in baseball, if not the best team in baseball, outside of the Dodgers and the Giants.
Well, now the issue becomes over the next 5 months. What do you do to keep this team together or improve it? Mm-hmm. And there will be a lot of conversation about Ray and Semien and whether you keep them or don't keep them, who else is available, who else you can go out and get. The rest of the roster is pretty much intact. Those are the two key pieces that you have to keep. And we'll see where they go. But I think if you're a Blue Jay fan, you have to have some level of confidence that this management appears to know exactly what it's doing. Yeah. And for the most part has made the right moves. And the place where they fell apart was the bullpen.
Yeah.
And it wasn't for lack of trying. They brought in all kinds of guys. And they just didn't have any success with any of them.
Yeah. The other guy that I don't think, I really don't think is getting enough credit, enough mention, is Alex Manoah. I mean, we forget this guy's a first-year starter. But in the last month or so, every time he's on the mound, it is money. He has been so good. And now, in my mind, when we talk about, the starters, this guy's a cornerstone now.
Oh, well, he's a foundational piece without any
absolutely
doubt.
But I don't, because Ray's contract has expired and Ryu's got the big money early, I don't think we talk about Manoah enough, how good he is. I really don't.
Well, we'll see. I mean, time will tell. The one thing about young pitchers who come into this game, and we've seen it repeatedly, is once hitters get a book on a guy, things can change. And so it's a constant level of adjustment over and over and over and over again. And we'll see whether he's able to do that, but there's no reason to believe he can't. He looks like a stud.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was, when you think about what he, I sat and watched him one hit the Rays one night at Rogers Center, and then again in Baltimore. Now Baltimore is Baltimore, but at the same time, the Friday night game, he was just in full control 100% of the time, and it was very, very impressive.
Well, yeah, and I mean, We talk about guys who impress and can be on the roster, but this is a front of the roster guy. This guy has, he looks like he's a number one, maybe a number two, depending on who else you got in your lineup, but that's how good he is.
Well, and that becomes the question, Bob, in my mind is does Manoah's growth change your philosophy of how you handle the Ray contract discussions? Does it?
Well,
I don't know.
Look, I think at the end of the day, the Blue Jays would like to keep both Ray and Semien.
Yeah.
I think everybody would. But realistically, economically, they may feel that now's the time to part company there. And the question they're going to have to ask themselves, and probably already have a million times, is which of the two is more important? And you can make the argument that pitching is not something you let go without a certain degree of reluctance. And in that scenario, if you believe that, then Ray is the guy you got to keep. And then you question Semien, just had a career year. Can he repeat that? He seems to be a great teammate, a great leader for this team. Not that they're, you know, they have Springer who also can lead and does lead. It's easier to find a second baseman than it is to find a starting pitcher. But you're not going to find
a second baseman that hits 45 home runs.
Not going to find one of those. Nobody ever has.
No.
Nobody ever has.
Yeah.
You know, he has the record for most home runs by a second baseman. And he's a solidifying force on the team. But economics are going to play a role in this. And we've talked about this, you know, periodically all year long. That it's not just Ray and Semien, but look what you've got coming in the next 2 years.
Right.
In terms of contracts, you got a first baseman, a shortstop, a right fielder, all of whom are going to want to get paid. And, you know, I don't want to get into too much depth here because we'll have, you know, many months to discuss this. But one of the surprising benefits of this year was the performance of Espinal, who is not a traditional third baseman. If Espinal had the offensive numbers that he had and played shortstop or played the middle infield, you'd be ecstatic over him. The only question mark about Espinal is he doesn't hit it hard enough. He doesn't hit enough home runs traditionally for a third baseman. But my position on that is I don't care because I've got a shortstop that hits more than almost anybody else. I've got a second baseman who hits more than most. If you had three or four second baseman, they wouldn't hit as many as him under normal circumstance. And you got power all over the lineup. So, do you know, how many home runs do you have to hit in order to be successful? Somewhere in your lineup, you need a guy or two or three who can get a base hit. And Espinal has done that consistently all year.
Yeah, he has.
And
It took some time to get him there, but you're right. The other thing
But he didn't get an opportunity, John. That he didn't perform. It's just they didn't seem to have the confidence in him.
Right.
And so they kept rotating him in and out of the lineup. And he stuck around and defensively he was near perfect.
Yeah. The one thing I hope we hear in the next little while, because it might manage some of the angst of the fans, is whether Ray and Semien want to be here, because that's in the end. I mean, I don't think money's going to be an issue. The determining factor is, does Semien want to go back to California? Where does Ray want to play? And was this time in Toronto enough of a sell job for both of them to want to come and back to a young team that can be a championship team?
I'll tell you, if I was them, I'd want to be here. And I've never said this in 50 years. I'd want to be here with this group. It just seems to me that this group has such great internal chemistry. The guys all seem to like each other, all seem to root for each other. They're all enthusiastic. They're all confident. And if you're Ray or Semien, you're looking around and saying, okay, is there a better team in baseball right now? Is there a better young team in baseball right now? Because this team has a chance to be great for 5 years or more.
Yes.
And sure, the Dodgers can do it. The Dodgers have a very good team and they have lots of money. But would you rather be here than New York? I would. I think the Blue Jays team moving forward looks better than the Yankees team. They're better look better than the Boston team. They're better than Atlanta. They're better than Chicago. They're better, you know, I mean, go up and down the list.
I think the only competition for both guys are California teams, Bob.
Well,
I really do.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to money. Cause I don't think I could be wrong, but I don't think either guy really wants to leave. I think both guys enjoyed their experience. That camaraderie that builds in baseball when you spend so much time with the other players, and especially in the scenario where they were in Dunedin for a month, then in Buffalo for 2 or 3 months, and then, you know, and then I think that's got to mean something to them. I think both guys will want to stay. And now it'll come down to what is Rogers prepared to do to fight off the others who will aspire to get them.
Yeah.
And we'll find out in due time.
Yeah.
We're going to talk more over the next few days about the Blue Jays' performance, what they do, where they go. And also, we'll keep an eye on the postseason. And the unfortunate part is that we don't have a horse in the race at this point. But on to basketball today a little bit, although Doug Smith may have some thoughts on the Blue Jays as well. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star will join us when we continue after these messages. McCown and Shannon back with you. Doug Smith, the Toronto Star, joins us ostensibly to talk basketball. But during the break, we've been chatting a little bit about baseball. And I know you keep your eyes on the Blue Jays a little bit. Did you cover this team at one point?
I covered 91, 92, 93 when they were really good. And 94, the lockout, the scab year. And then picked them up a little bit the last 4 or 5 years, a couple series here and there just to fill in. But yeah, I've been around it for a while.
Yeah, well, give us your general thoughts about this. Close but no cigar.
Yeah, I think, and as I said, I think they're the authors of their own demise. I think they let a lot of games get away in April, May, June, and July that cost them in September and October. And for whatever reason, you know, the bullpen was a shambles. They threw the ball over the ballpark some nights. Displacement, well, having to play in three home stadiums in years, it's a difficult thing. But there's a lot to like about this team. I think its offense is, I said yesterday, I covered WAMCO, and I thought that was the best offense I've ever seen in baseball. This one's close and might be better in a couple of years, but they hit the ball great. They just gave away too many games early in the year for whatever reason.
When a team loses, inevitably there will be those who will point a finger at the manager, and that has happened with Charlie Montoya, although not to a great extent. What kind of a job do you guys think he did?
I got him, I mean, average. I think he probably miscalculated a few things early in the year. I think he finished strong, but then he also finished strong because he could run out a really, really good team and a pitching staff that was very solid. You know, once Manoah got going, Barrios was really good. Steven Matz came out of nowhere at the end of the year to be, you know, a really good pitcher. I think there were bullpen nights early in the season that he cost them games. And I don't think he won enough to make up for the ones that he couldn't get them over the hump.
See, the interesting thing is that we've heard all the rumors and rumblings, and Ross was on with us to deny that it happened. But the amount of management from the front office on a game day, and here's who plays in certain scenarios in the seventh inning, and here, you know, the computer guys deciding what the lineup is. That's one thing, and that's something that is out of Charlie's control. The one thing that was always talked about before he got here, and it appears to have come true, was his relationship with players and his ability to create an environment that people like playing in. Now, the players have a lot to say with that, but the manager can pour gasoline on that, or he can pour water on it. And he seems to have done a really good job of creating a really fun work environment, and I think he deserves some credit for that.
Yeah, I agree, John. But I do think over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks, we heard, I think the players like playing with each other a little bit more than they like playing for the manager. We didn't hear a whole lot of, man, we love Charlie. We got to win this for Charlie. We got to do this for Charlie. We got to do it for each other. And this is a great team. And I wonder, do they need to replace him? Probably not, because he does get the most out of the team. But I do think he mismanaged the bullpen at times early in the year. And I think that's a knock, and it's a legitimate knock.
Yeah, and I mean, the question, I suppose, Dougie, is did he mismanage the bullpen, or was he not given the arms to be able to manage the bullpen? And I think it's true. It may be a bit of both.
A combination of the displacement, a combination Dunedin, Buffalo, Toronto, and not having the right arms available. I don't think you can blame on Montoyo.
I don't think he's solely to blame. I think there were some games, but you look down there and you got Chatwood and Dolis and three guys named Mo. And you got to pick one, and you don't know who's going to give you the six outs you need.
Yeah.
And I think some nights he might have picked wrong, and it's a cruel world. But sometimes change is necessary.
Well, we'll have plenty of time, as I mentioned earlier, to address the Blue Jays offseason and where they go from here. Meanwhile, Raptors camp is underway. I assume you have seen some of this, have you?
Yeah, we've seen enough. We saw them scrimmage on Saturday in London, and we've seen snippets here and there. They look like a bunch of crazy kids running around not knowing what they're doing.
Well, that's not exactly optimistic.
I was going to say, it doesn't really endear any confidence, Doug.
I think they'll figure it out, but right now they're a little bit disorganized, a little bit energetic, and a little bit over the top. But they're young, exuberant kids, and I think they will figure it out. You know, they're a week in. I think tonight playing against Philly, against another NBA team, will be very interesting, because I think they're good, but I don't know. And I don't think they know.
But you think that there's enough talent here to be a playoff team?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I do. I think there's enough talent in Van Vliet, Anunoby, Siakam, Boucher, Dragic, those kind of guys to be a playoff team in that, 3-10 kind of area, maybe 4-10. That area. I don't know, injuries are going to play a factor when they get Siakam back. A lot of it's going to do with how other teams do. Like, does Philly go right in the toilet? What does Boston do? Does, Chicago finally figure it out? Is Atlanta any good, really? I think a lot of it's going to depend on what other teams do, but I think the Raptors are going to be right in the thick of things, yeah.
So Dragic is here physically.
Oh, yeah.
Is he here mentally?
100%. He's a pro. He's a 35-year-old guy, played 14 years in the NBA. He's going to play hard. Would he prefer to be in Dallas? Absolutely. But he's not. So he's not going to quit on him. He's not going to loaf. I think he's a professional basketball player, and I think he's going to play and play pretty hard and probably play a significant role, because I think they need that kind of old head who can make a shot and get them organized and get them slowed down a little bit when they need to.
Are we past the trade talk for Dragic? Is that over now?
For now, it is. I think it's going to resurface in February around the deadline for sure, depending on where the team is and where other teams are and what the market's like. But I think for now, I think everybody's sort of settled in for the next, 25 regular season games, and then it'll pick up again.
So if you're Van Vliet or one of the other guards, are you going to defer to Dragic then?
No, I think Van Vliet's the leader of the team. He's going to run the team. If you're Malachi Flynn, you're going to learn from Dragic. I think they would hope. The other kid, Delano Banton, the kid from Rexdale, he's going to play a lot in the G League. I don't think there's going to be deferring to Dragic, because Fred is the leader of the team. But I think a kid like Flynn can certainly learn from him and see how he handles a game, sort of manages the game on the court.
Flynn had some interesting games last year where his statistics may have belied his performance overall. That's just my opinion of it. And he's a young player and he needs to learn. And especially at that position, it does take time. But where do you think he's at? What kind of a player do you think he can be?
You know what? We don't know. I think he could be a good player, but he's got to learn to shoot better. He's got to make more shots, and he's going to get them. Because if they play two guards, as they do basically all the time, he's going to have some freedom to run the floor, curdle along the baseline, get a corner three. He's got to make that shot. And I think that's going to determine whether this is a good year or a average year for him. We haven't seen enough in training camp to know, but I do know he has a work ethic, and I do think he has the shot mechanics, but he's got to make them, or he's just not going to – then he's just an average player.
I was going to ask you, if you had Van Vliet, Dragic, or Flynn to take a three-pointer to win, Flynn be at the top of the list, or where would he be?
He would be third. Van Vliet would be first because he's got the stones and just wants to take the shot.
Yeah.
Dragic has done it before in Olympic basketball, in the NBA, in big NBA games. Flynn is still very much learning that kind of stress and pressure and responsibility.
But in the end, his shot is what's going to keep him in the game, correct?
Yeah. Fred Van Vliet told us that the day one, he's got to make three pointers. He's got to be able to be a shooter, to be a threat, a bigger threat out there.
Well, when you're talking about three pointers, you want some of your wing guys to be able to hit the three. Who's that guy? If it's not a guard taking the three, who is the other guy that can make the three? And I know Ananobi's shot has improved significantly since year one. I'm just not sure I'm giving him the ball in a key situation, even though he made that incredible shot.
Yeah, that's the issue with this team. I don't think they have enough shooting. I think Gary Trent's got to become a more consistent shooter and a big game, big time kind of shooter. I don't know whether he can this year. The kid they signed who was in Detroit and Oklahoma City last year, Sri Mykhailiuk, he's in the NBA because he can shoot. But he's got to make those shots, and he didn't at the end of last year. He was, I think, a 40% shooter 2 years ago from three and a 32% shooter last year. So he's got to get back to that upper echelon level. But I don't think this team has enough shooting right now, and I think that's going to be a problem.
Who played? Go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, when Nick was on with us, we asked him how much Scotty Barnes was going to play. He made it sound like he's going to play a lot. Anything that you see that changes that opinion?
No, he's going to play an awful lot. He's going to play all over the floor, too. They had him in the scrimmage on Saturday, and it was, they're playing each other, so it's a little bit weird. But they had him bringing the ball up at the end of the game just to learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. They sort of put him around the floor in different spots, let him guard different guys. Yeah, they're gonna throw him right into the fire. I don't think as a starter at all, but he's going to play 24, 26 minutes a night probably. I don't think anybody knows what position he plays, but he's a very good basketball player. So they're going to let him they're going to figure out with him where he's most effective. But, yeah, he's going to get a shot to play for sure.
Well, I know that even talking about this in the way I'm about to is going to make me sound like a dinosaur because the game has changed so much. Positions on the floor are almost irrelevant. You don't necessarily have to have one big guy at center, two not quite so big guys on the wings, and two smaller guys at guards, one of whom is the point guard and one of whom is the shooting guard. Like that whole traditional, this is how you put a basketball team together is gone, essentially. But how many times is Pascal Siakam going to be out there and essentially be the center?
Well, I think a lot. I think there's a lot of time he's going to be out there with Boucher and Ananobi in the front court. He's going to be out
But Boucher's on the floor, Dougie. Boucher is the traditional center.
But he's not guarding centers because he's too skinny still. And he gets pushed around and it's not effective.
He needs to be with media guys to put some weight on.
I think he's like 28 or 29 years old. I think he's done. His body is his body. Until he gets to be our age, then it expands a little bit, as we know.
You don't have to try then.
They're not going to have a traditional center. They're not going to throw the ball in a post and run guys off cuts at all. They don't have that Gasol or even Ibaka, Valanciunas especially. They don't, and that's okay. They're going to run around a lot. I think a guy like Precious Achiuwa might be an interesting post player to initiate offense, but he doesn't have post moves per se. So it's going to be they're going to fly around, look a little bit disorganized and get stuff off motion, off reading and reacting. And that's how they're going to play.
How deep will this roster be? I mean, in an ideal scenario, you got what? Eight? Is that pretty much ideal?
In the playoffs, eight, maybe nine. Yeah. In a regular season, you need 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get that. But who are the principals here? It sounds to me like we might see a whole whack of guys given opportunities.
I think you'll see 11 or 12 play every night. You're going to see right now. I think the five starters are probably, and this is a guess going into the first preseason game, Van Vliet, Dragic, Ananobi, Boucher, Birch. The backups are Achiuwa, Barnes, Flynn, Trent, and I'm forgetting somebody else in there.
Well, you didn't put Siakam in the starting
lineup. But he's hurt, though.
Yeah, because he's not going to see him until probably December 1st.
Right. Oh, okay.
But he'll be in there when the games count. But there's 10 right there. And I think Watanabe is a very interesting player. I think Freddie Gillespie is an interesting player. They would be the end of the rotation, end of the bench kind of guys. But there's going to be a lot of guys playing because there's a lot of guys who are the same.
Yeah.
They don't have a division. They don't have that. Here are 9, here are our next 6.
Right.
Here are our 12, and here's 3 more who are pretty good.
Watanabe is a dilemma for me because when a couple of times last year and in his career, you look at him and you go, and he makes some moves and you go, holy smokes. Why can't he do that every time he's down the floor? Why can't he be more consistent? Is that his biggest issue, Doug?
I don't know if it's consistency or deferral. Like he wasn't aggressive last year because he was on the court with Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, and he didn't feel comfortable taking the ball and going. I think this year we've talked to him about it. He has to be more assertive because he's really good. I think he's got a lot of skill. And he plays, he's got a lot of talent in a lot of different ways. And I wrote about him yesterday because he spent all the time with the Japanese Olympic team in the summer where he was the guy. He and Rui Hachimura were the two guys. And he took all the shots, dribbled the ball, made all the decisions, defended the biggest guy in the other team, and loved it. I think he's got to do more of that in the NBA. And he's still relatively young. He can learn how to do that. And they're going to give him that opportunity. He's one of the most intriguing players on the roster because I think he could be really, really good, but he also has to grow into a role that he feels comfortable being assertive and in charge.
Sounds like there's just the way you're describing it. There's a lot of guys like Watanabe on this team.
Yeah, there are. There's a lot of relatively young guys. Like, Achiuwa is only 21, 22 years old. He's very intriguing, but you don't know whether it's going to be, is he going to be Pascal Siakam or is he going to be Pop Sow? Which side of the ledger is he going to fall on? Because you don't know. He's played 1 year in Miami and lost his job to Dwayne Dedman at the end of the year. So you don't know yet. And I think there's a lot of I don't knows about this team in the back end. I think their 5-7 guys are consistently, what you're going to get from VanVleet, Dragic, Anunoby, Trent, Siakam, Birch when he gets out there, Boucher. You know what you're going to get. It's the other guys who are going to be really intriguing to see who emerges from that group.
With Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, we're chatting about the Raptors as the preseason is set to begin officially. We'll come back and chat some more after these messages. It's the Bob McCowan Podcast. Yours truly, John Shannon, Doug Smith of the Toronto Star with you. I'm wondering what management's view of this team is. It is a rebuild in many ways, but a rebuild centered around 3 guys that aren't veterans who are still youngish, kind of in the peak of their careers, in Anunoby and Siakam and VanVleet. They're probably right in that prime era. Long term, are they looking for some of these young kids to break through? We all know that in this NBA, you don't win without star players, and I mean elite players. And with due respect to the 3 guys we're talking about, I'm not sure any of them are elite. They're all really good, but are they enough to get you to a shot at a championship, Doug?
Probably not yet, and I think that's what Mazai and Bobby are interested in, to see who emerges in the next 2 or 3 years to be that guy, that group of guys that gets you to the championship contender level. I think they're willing to give it time. They know, they think this is a good team right now, and they think in a couple of years, 3 years, it could be great. And they may need to add. It may need the one guy to come in and put them over the top, or maybe that one guy emerges. You could conceivably consider this team in the last 2 years would probably have VanVleet and Siakam, both of them were borderline all-stars. Can they take the next step where they're both all-stars? No, that's a big question. You don't know. Same thing with Anunoby. You're not really sure. The pieces are there, but it needs some time. And the management is willing to give them that time to find out what they are. And it's going to be a 2-3 year process. they're not giving up on this year, because I do think they think they're a playoff team. I think they're a playoff team. And once you get in, we all know, once you get in, anything can happen. And I do think maybe next summer, the summer after, when there's a chance to get that one guy, that Kawhi Leonard, then you're going to be able to go and do it.
Yeah. To me, so much of what this team is going to end up being is, we all know what Van Vliet is. We know what Siakam is when he's healthy, I think. So to me, it points at one guy, and that's Anunoby. You know, has he made that next stride? Can he make the next stride? I think there's lots of people that still have question marks about Anunoby. Don't you, Doug?
There probably are, but I think he's going to be really, really good. I mean, he's already an elite defender, absolutely top of the line NBA defender. I think his shot is coming around, came around. Mm-hmm. His creation off the dribble is the next evolution, the next step, his decision-making. But he's got a chance to be really, really, really good. I don't know if it's this year, if it's next year, if it's, you know, if it's not going to happen. But my bet would be he's going to be an elite player in the NBA sooner rather than later.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this coach and his fit with this team. My sense of Nick Nurse is that he is not traditional, that he is creative, that he is fully prepared to do things that other coaches wouldn't do because they're stuck in their own mindset of what the game should look like. And that while these players are trying to figure themselves out, Nick Nurse is going to be trying to figure out, how do I put these pieces together in the right way? You're nodding, so I gather you tend to agree.
I think Nick is really, really, as you said, Bob, creative, and he's got a bunch of things around that he can create with. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be a lot of trial and error. I think, you know, 6 games into the season, you might say, oh, crap, this doesn't work. We got to try plan B. But he is more than willing to go quickly to plan B. And I think that's important, because you don't know what this team is going to be like for sure. And if it doesn't work right off the bat, well, let's change it. Let's try something else. And you have enough pieces that you can try a lot of different things. I think he's really energized by the fact that he's got, 7 guys who are like 6'9" with 7-foot wingspans and can just sort of put them all out there and let them play and let them figure it out. And I think he's probably a good coach for this group, because he is willing to make mistakes and experiment and find out what works.
You make it sound like he's good for young guys then.
Young athletic guys who have intriguing bits, and you can find out what the best way to use them is. And, you know, he was really good with the group that had Kawhi, obviously won a championship, but he experimented a lot that year, and he didn't have Kawhi for 20 games, and I think they went 17-3. So he has that ability to mix and match, put pieces together, figure it out as it comes along. And there's going to be a lot of figuring out with this group in the first 25 games of this year.
Well, one of the things we talk a lot about is development. And we think, you know, there are many fans that would suggest that most development happens in high school and then in college. But the truth of the matter is that when you're drafting 18 and 19-year-olds, there's a lot of development at the NBA level. And what this organization has seemingly been able to do is develop players at the NBA level. Take guys that had some raw skills but didn't overwhelm by achievement in college, bring them into the pros and teach them and develop them. And that's one of the assets that we tend to overlook sometimes and not spend enough time talking about. And in that, it makes it hard, don't you think, to talk about a Barnes or somebody, one of the other young kids. Like, what he is now is not likely to be what he's going to be.
100%. And the proof is in the pudding, because what Pascal Siakam is today, he was nowhere near that 3 years ago. OG Anunoby couldn't shoot the ball from 8 feet when he came in a game, and now he's a 35% three-point shooter. Fred VanVleet is still 5'10", and they made him into an NBA point guard. So, yeah, guys like Barnes, Achiuwa, Watanabe, those are pieces that you can mold. Like Barnes's jump shot is basic. It's not broken, but it needs a lot of repair. And if he's willing to put the work in, you know the Raptors have the skills and the coaching staff to teach him to be better.
That leads me to an interesting question, because everybody's talking about a semi rebuild. You believe that they're a 3-8 team in the, for a playoff spot. How much roster transition do you see this year? I mean, is there how patient are Bobby and Masai, and I guess to a lesser extent Nick, how patient are they going to be with not the core but the fringe guys?
I think they're going to give most of those guys the whole year to see what they can be, because there's no need to rush them. There's no expectation, so you really don't need those guys. You want to give them a chance to fail or succeed. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you're going to see guys moving in and out in January and February because they're not getting it done then. I think they're going to give them a lot of time to figure it out. They like, you know, the core group of 5-7 guys who've been here for a long time, and Dragic has been in the league for 14 years. They're fine. They're going to win a lot of games, and it's how they develop those other end of the rotation guys that are going to determine whether this is a 37 win team or 44 win team. Hmm. And you know, that's going to be the difference between, I think, probably ninth in the East and fourth in the East. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Elsewhere, what happens with Simmons?
Oh, he's got to get moved. I hope they don't trade him today when Philly's in town, but he's got to get moved this week. Because it's just unworkable. He can't go back because his teammates don't want him around. His coaches don't want him around. He doesn't want to be there. This whole, oh, we welcome you back. We want to work with you, make you better, get us a team back. That's crap.
That's not happening.
That's crap. They want him gone. They can't wait till they get him out of there to see what they can get for him. And he can't wait to leave to go play somewhere else.
Well, but they're not going to get what they want for
him. No, no.
And they're certainly not going to get anywhere near what they were asking for him, you know, 2-3 months ago.
No, they're going to get 25 cents on a dollar.
And I was going to say, that's an untradeable. That's an untradeable contract.
They wait a week.
Yeah.
No, because
so, any guess?
No, my guess, I still think there's probably a deal to be done with Golden State, but I don't know what it is, and it might be around Wiggins and Wiseman. That might be the one that's out there. But you got teams sniffing around now like Minnesota, Detroit, Indianapolis. Toronto's made calls, but the first call was, we want Siakam, Van Vliet, Ananobi, and 2 picks. Well, and why bother? Like, why bother returning the call? Well, why bother having that conversation? It's so ridiculous. But I do think by this Thursday, that price is going to come down to one starter, one rotation guy, and 2 picks. And I think the longer Philly waits, the more Philly's going to get screwed.
Would the Raptors entertain a deal for Simmons? Or, I mean,
I think they would. They're intrigued. You know, who's not intrigued by a 6'10" point guard with great passing skills who is already probably one of the top 5 defenders in the NBA?
That can't shoot. Firstly,
I wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
Right. Me neither.
4 years in the NBA, he is no better an offensive player today than he was when he came in.
He has no work ethic.
That's
none.
On him. Yeah, that's on him. That's on work ethic and getting in the gym and making yourself a better player with fixing obvious flaws, shooting technique, shooting willingness, and his ability to play offense in the NBA in this day and age. But, I wouldn't have him on my team in a million years, despite his upside.
But even more so, Doug, all these histrionics in the last month, I'm not showing up stuff. That can't augur well for any. Why would anybody jeopardize anything about for a guy like this that you?
Well, I'll tell you who would.
You can't control.
Only because it takes one guy to say I'm smarter than the other guy and I'm going to make him better, and then you find out you can't.
And that happens all the time.
100%. Yeah, one is untradeable anymore, no matter personality or contract.
Well, under that scenario, he winds up with the Knicks, even though the Knicks were a much better team last year and look like they're probably on the road to being respectable. This is exactly the kind of deal that the Knicks make.
And it's exactly the kind of city where Ben Simmons would get chewed up and spat out like in 36 seconds.
Totally. No,
but he'd love to be there.
Sure he would, because New York, it's the Mecca and it's the Knicks.
Yeah.
And the media would run him out of town in a month.
Well, they might run him out of town before he even arrives. They might run him out before when they announce the signing.
Yeah, they have to move him. And maybe there's a Houston deal for John Wall who has to get moved as well. Maybe there's something there too. But
yeah,
that he's got to go, and he's got to go soon just so you can get on with the season.
Who should we be looking for this year in the NBA to reign supreme? Is Milwaukee still the best team, or were they ever the best team?
I'm not sure they were the best team. I think Brooklyn is fascinating, but they got to play. They got to play together. Like, it's a fat, you know, the talent level is off the charts. Even, you know, adding a guy like Patty Mills is huge. LaMarcus Aldridge coming back is a big, big get for them. Brooklyn has the best talent in the league by far.
Kyrie's got to play at home. Yeah. Kyrie's got to play home games, doesn't he?
That's the other part. you know, that's one of them. And Harden's got to stay healthy, and Kevin Durant's got to stay healthy. But they have the best talent on the roster, and it's not even close. I think the Lakers are intriguing. The West is a bit of a mess. I'll tell you, in the East, the interesting team that I want to see to find out what they do is Chicago, because they got a whole bunch of guys now. And they got a bunch. They had a bunch of guys last year. They got Vucevic at the trade deadline, and it went south. But this year they went out and they got Ball. They got DeMar. They got Vucevic still. They got LaVine still. That's very going to be a very intriguing team to me. You know, not a championship team, but I could see it. I could see the Bulls finishing third in the East if they figure it all out.
In the West, you mentioned the West. Could you see Golden State making a comeback? Maybe not to the level they were at, but pretty close.
Yeah, I can. It depends again when Klay Thompson gets back, whether that's January or late November or February. I think that's going to determine how they do in the regular season, which gets them the good playoff matchups. I think the West is basically, you know, the Lakers got a lot of old guys, a lot of really good guys, a lot of really old guys.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I think the Lakers may have peaked.
I think so. And I'm sure they're going to punt on the regular season. They're probably going to give up 15, 20 games by resting guys because they're 36, 37, 35, all of them. And I think they're primed to play in May, June, or April, May, and June. I think, you know, they probably have the best talent in the West, but it's old talent and bodies break down. And you know, over 82 games, first time anybody's played 82 games in 3 years.
That's right.
They didn't play it in the bubble year. They didn't play it last year. They're playing 82 this year. It's going to be interesting to see who survives that with the Lakers.
We're going to notice the league's COVID rule playing any role. They say they're at 95%, Doug. So it's the 5% we're concerned about. So how are we going to, and we did see the histrionics of a few guys, but are we going to see it or notice it?
No, I don't think so. You might miss game. You might see one guy miss one game for a health and safety protocol on a contact tracing kind of thing. But it's certainly not going to be like last year. And I don't think it's going to be an issue at all. I don't think you'll see teams like the Raptors were decimated last year by it. Boston fought through it all year. I don't think you're going to see that this year. I think the NBA, like the hockey, the players have realized what's in their best interest, and that's to get the shot, to get some sort of normalcy in their lives. It's funny. We talked to both Sheree Mikhailuk and Utah Watanabe this on the weekend about this year, what's it like? So the biggest thing is they can go to the gym now whenever they want and get their shots up, get working, work out whenever they want. Last year, if you want to go to the gym at 4 o'clock, you had to take a test at 3 and you had to wait till that test result came back before you could even go in the gym to work. It was a pain in the butt to do. This year, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to do that. And I think that's going to be the good thing. But yeah, it'll be a non-issue by, you know, at the start, it'll be issue because of Kyrie, Jonathan Isaac. You know, I think Wiggins got his shot, so that's kind of resolved. I think there'll be some chatter about it early, but it'll be a forgotten issue by December.
So the big news was LeBron, you know, on the shot front. LeBron got his shot, and a lot of us went, he hadn't had it.
Yeah.
And Wiggins was the guy who stood up and says, I'm not getting it, and now has had it. You don't have any idea what Wiggins' agenda motive was, do you?
No, none. And obviously – He had applied for a religious exemption, but there was never any explanation of what that was. So I'm not sure if that was just performative and a way to try to get around it. When it failed, he said, okay, well, give me the shot. Let's go. Because, frankly, 41 games of missed game checks is a lot of money.
Well, yeah. It'll be intriguing to see whether there are other players out there who are willing to give up any checks because they don't have a shot.
Yeah, the only ones, you know, I guess the only two cities where it's mandated that they have to have both shots to play in their home arenas are San Francisco and New York.
Yeah. Right.
And Irving is now the guy. And Kyrie Irving is the question mark because Wiggins got the shot. So if, you know, if Kyrie's willing to give up 41 paydays, well, I guess.
Well, he's the one guy who might just do it, yeah, and we 100%. Wouldn't be shocked, right?
100%. He is that kind of recalcitrant, iconoclast guy that just, he could, yeah, just say, my principle is I'm not doing it. And then the team's got to deal with it. And I don't know what the hell they would do.
Actually, not to be picky, it would be more than 41, because they, I think the Nets would play three games at the Garden too. So
yeah, yeah. it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of time, and it's a lot of angst, and it's a lot of, a lot of screwing your teammates over. And I think that's going to be the big, like Fred VanVleet said it to us on the weekend, that, or I guess media day, we asked about vaccination. He goes, well, the best thing is now you don't have to worry about how we're going to take care of this guy. As a team, you can do things, and you don't have to worry about, okay, as a team, we can do this, but what are we going to do about Joe Blow? That doesn't exist anymore. And that would is going to exist in Brooklyn. And that's going to be a divisive thing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, in the talks you've had with the players, how much reflection on how difficult last year was for them and playing in Tampa? We've heard and seen a lot, but they're home now. They're going to play in front of people. They've got to be thrilled.
They are thrilled. Quietly and privately, and reading between the lines when you talked to them the last week, they hated Tampa. But the people took care of them. The Tampa people took care of them nicely. The arena was great for them. The Buccaneers and the Lightning organizations did a great job for them. They got them housing. Everything kind of worked out. But they hated Tampa. There were no fans. The fans were there were cheering for the other team. There were only 3,000 people in the building at the most. It was just bad. It wasn't good. Now they got their, you know, they had their own gym there, but it was in a ballroom of a hotel. Now they have the OVO Center here where they can go and eat and get a sauna and do whatever they got to do. It's normal. I think they're really excited about being home. I don't know whether it carries over to wins and losses, but it's going to be a lot of peace of mind.
Well, we saw what it meant to the Toronto Blue Jays. Not quite enough, but an awful lot. A full season for the Raptors at home and with crowds. Who knows? Maybe that alone is enough to make them, you know, 10, 15 wins better.
No, if that's the 6 or 7 wins, like I say, that gets them from 36 to 43, that's huge. And it could very well be, because there were a lot of games last year that when you were watching, you thought, okay, if they were at home, the energy of the crowd would get them 3 baskets right now and they're going to win. And they didn't win them. And I think that's going to be very interesting to watch develop through the regular season.
Dougie, we got to scoot. We thank you as always. Stay well.
Our kids, absolutely.
And we'll chat soon, I hope.
We'll be back. Opening night's pretty soon. We'll talk to you then.
Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, back with more after these messages. Our thanks to Doug Smith for joining us. Well, for many, last night was spent in front of the television set, as is often the case on a Sunday night.
Well, they got the best schedule for the NFL, I can tell you that.
Well, sure. It's that's the big game.
Yeah.
Used to be Monday night football. Now it's Sunday night football. And it was, it was a big draw. The pregame shows were like on and on and on about Brady. And I love Brady. I got nothing but respect for him. But I was, you know, I've heard it all before. I've seen it all before. I know he's the GOAT. Mm. I get it. I don't disagree. I just thought it was a little bit of overkill.
Amazing to me, Bob. You're right about that. All three other networks, ESPN, CBS, and Fox, did stuff in their shows through the day about Brady. And, I mean, it was the greatest non-financial promotion for NBC that they've ever had. And then NBC's promotion and discussion about the Brady show last night was above and beyond. To me, that it was a classic. I mean, Nick Folk hits the upright. New England should have won the game. In the end,
have won the game.
It
was a 50-yard plus field goal. Look,
yeah, 56 yards.
Yeah, that's far.
And he hit it long enough. I mean, I think it was his first miss in 36 consecutive attempts. But I'll tell you what, if you're a New England fan after watching the team win 6 Super Bowls, you walk away happy that you saw Brady win again. And at the same time, you see a ton of potential out of your own team again. I mean, Mac Jones played a really solid football game. Not great, but solid. Some good reads for a young quarterback. And the Patriots may not be, you know, a playoff team this year. But Belichick's on his way back. Belichick, their defense is solid. The New England Patriots have turned that corner, have their quarterback of the future, and are going to be a factor in a few years again.
Well, there's no doubt that Brady going up against his former coach, created problems for Tom because his coach, Belichick, played with the defense all night long.
Yes, he did.
Knowing what Tom's, better than anybody, mm-hmm. what Tom's probable modus operandi was going to be on any given play.
Yeah.
And apparently he was as right as he was wrong, or more right than wrong.
Well, I mean, the fact that they were able to, the Tampa defense is supposed to be very good. Ton of injuries now. I mean, at least three defensive backs now hurt. You know, the fact that New England was able to move the ball at key times, particularly in the last 2 minutes, to get an attempt to win it. I think was a really, really one of those nights. When you get out of your seat, you're going back to the car, you're saying, man, it was nice to see Brady. You know, he won. That's a good storybook. But I'll tell you what, that was a moral victory if there was any victories for any football team for the New England Patriots. I truly believe that.
Well, as a closing point, I would like to make this. I have no idea how leagues do their schedules, but I certainly raised a Spockian eyebrow when I saw that Tampa Bay was going to be at New England this year. I think amazing, that was slightly contrived.
Well, and listen, next week, Sunday night, Buffalo at Kansas City, and the Bills are rolling now, Bob. The Bills are rolling. That's going to be another great matchup when you consider those two young quarterbacks, Allen and Mahomes.
And Kansas City has not exactly looked like a defending Super Bowl champion. They have, I know they've been in every game, but they look like they may have some defensive problems. Yeah. We shall see what happens.
And by the way, the best team in the National Football League right now just might be the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, they are dangerous.
Yes.
We got to get out of here. Time is our enemy. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for watching or listening. Goodbye.